The Indiana GOP unseats the incumbent Secretary of State. Low-income Hoosiers left out of inflation relief, plus teen mental health struggles and more. On Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 24th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
Today, the Supreme Court of the United States overturned the near 50-year so-called super precedent Roe v. Wade, opening the ban of abortion care to the discretion of states. Indiana lawmakers have planned for this outcome for several weeks following the leak of a draft opinion. Could we have imagined witnessing the fall of Roe v. Wade? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting digital editor Lauren Chapman in this week for Brandon Smith. The Senate passed its bipartisan gun bill late last night. We will talk about that next week and also discuss plans from Indiana lawmakers to further restrict abortion access in greater detail then as well. But first, Ann Delaney, what's your initial reaction to the overturn of Roe v. Wade?
I mean, it's horrible. Donald Trump got exactly what he wanted. He wanted to pit Americans against each other. He wants dissension. He wants anger. He wants bitterness. He wants hatred. And that's what he got when he appointed those three people to the U.S. Supreme Court. I mean, the fact that we're restricting the rights of women 50 years later, when we had time after time, we were told precedent determines, and then they basically falsified their testimony in front of the committee. So I'm really concerned. I'm concerned for young women. There'll be protests. There's going to be a protest in Indiana tomorrow at the State House. People should go to that and let their views be heard, because this is going to be a terrible time for this country. I mean, between the issue of who has guns and we're not allowed to restrict the number of people killed by guns, and now we don't have rights over our own bodies. It's a terrible time. And I, frankly, until Donald Trump was elected, I never thought it would happen.
Mike O'Brien, what is your reaction to the overturn of Roe v. Wade? I mean, this has been a GOP talking point for decades.
Yeah, and a Christian right effort for since the day Roe v. Wade was a reality. So, I think the reality that we're going to enter isn't where the far right thinks, well, that's all done. We're at the beginning of another part of this now. That I think in Indiana, well, just what I know is Indiana, we'll have to be thoughtful and intentional about how we go forward. There is encouragement if you're worried about a complete wipeout of abortion rights in Indiana. We went through literally an entire legislative session this year of very extreme proposals being defeated on the floor. Mm-hmm. Defeated administratively or procedurally. And then the reaction to that was a primary season from the far right that almost exclusively failed. So it's interesting, I think, a little bit in Indiana that we now have a House majority and a General Assembly that can look at this and say we need to be thoughtful about how we, I know we're going to talk about this more next week, but thoughtful about how we chart the path forward, how we rethink investments in public health and women's health, and support around the fact that we're going to have, and this is the positive for the pro-life community, we're going to have more children born, and that requires support that we didn't really have to take seriously or didn't take seriously before that I hope we do.
John Schwannis, I mean, Indiana is ranks horribly for maternal mortality and infant mortality. What can we expect out of lawmakers?
Nothing.
Hey, that's a good ventriloquist act there.
That's the truth.
There will be a great emphasis, certainly, on health and public health, if only because the governor has signaled as much. He has created, you know, task forces to look at this, to come up with proposals, and there is money to fund it. However, when you look at some of these specific types of things, there may not be an appetite for that among Republicans. I think the primary reason during this past session that none of those extreme measures that Mike talked about prevailed is simply because leadership was able to say, we can wait. There's no reason to go ahead and do anything now.
Yeah, because that wasn't good enough for the crowd they were trying to appease in that. Because they looked around the rest of the country and you had trigger laws passed in every, you know, in states that are similar to politically
situated. But still, I think it was leadership wanting to say, with and it's a logical argument, let's wait until we see what the nation's highest court does. As far as this notion of a thoughtful reflection on you know, I don't see that happening on this issue. I think the lines are just too stark. You have people in the Republican caucus for whom this is raison d'etre. This is the primary, this and guns, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think they're really in a mood to sit back and let's think.
I wasn't naively suggesting a thoughtful reflection on the question of life. I was suggesting we've taken steps in years past to restrict sex education in schools, to restrict infant mortality funding, to, you know, and now we are entering a phase where the pro-life community won a huge victory. And now they have the opportunity
to
go.
They're not pro-life. They're pro-birth. That's all they are.
I think I'm arguing for the pro-life part of this.
It seems to me that
when the life exists.
Yeah, but they don't believe that. They believe birth is where their responsibility ends.
That's what I'm arguing for. I think we are at the beginning of another part of this, and it does allow us to reset the investments we're making in that space and how we're thinking about support for children and mothers.
The only thing that pro-choice activists feel good about, though, politically, is that to this point, anti-abortion forces have been united. It's a monolith. They basically have said, for the most part, you know, this is our mission, this is our calling, this is our mantra, be done with it. Now we'll start to see divisions within that because we'll see some who want to prosecute women. We'll see some who want to be very active in going after doctors, intercepting mail, preventing women or trying to prevent women from going across state lines. And there are other people in the pro-life movement who are saying, no, we never have advocated that.
Don't
we don't want that.
Contraception.
So,
that's next.
So I'm just saying the divisions that we used to see on the other side
remember
are now going
we're
to
just
going to
have our
move.
Initial reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Sorry.
Nick, sorry.
I'm
sorry.
To my distinguished colleague. Throw one thing in here, which is there was talk about, you know, whether we're going to support these children who are going to be born. And I will say that House Speaker Todd Houston, in his statement today, made very clear that a ban will go through at the same time as additional services and dollars to help support things. And it could be in updating WIC payments. It could be in, you know, a million different things. So that even makes the special session a little harder because we're also apparently going to appropriate some money for some sort services, or at least that's the what he has staked out for his chamber.
Yeah. Well, let's see if he can control his chamber.
That is an excellent question. Moving on, this week, former Mike Pence aide Diego Morales upset incumbent Holly Sullivan to earn the GOP nomination for Secretary of State. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports Morales' bid was viewed by many as a challenge to the governor and the so-called Republican establishment.
Morales has previously pushed the big lie that the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump. He's criticized Indiana's election security, arguing the state needs to do more to prevent non-citizens from voting, and he wants to cut in half the number of early voting days before each election, from 28 days to 14.
First of all, we are going to be efficient. Number two, we are going to save some taxpayers' money.
After his win, Morales preached unity among his party. During the convention, many of his supporters booed and heckled current Secretary of State Holly Sullivan. Indiana GOP Chair Kyle Hupford dismissed the notion of a fractured party.
This group will come together and you know, we will do the work that we do on every statewide election, and we'll get our vote out, we'll get our message out.
Democratic Secretary of State candidate Destiny Wells calls Morales a far-right election denier conspiracy theorist.
Mike O'Brien, Kyle Hupford dismissed this idea that this was a referendum on Eric Holcomb. Is he right?
He's wrong in part, and he's right in part. It was not a complete referendum on Eric Holcomb. That does, to what Kyle said, do a disservice to Diego actually working this. He wasn't some unknown guy that he was a protest vote, and that was as thoughtless as his support for him was. He's worked that circuit, that Republican Lincoln Day circuit, the county party circuit. That's where you get elected, in a room of 1,800 convention delegates who are largely, you know, from that, you know, from the party base. And he worked it really hard. You know, Holly had the disadvantage of being in two offices in the last 2 years and not having a full cycle to be Secretary of State and work that same crowd and that same organization. But it was in part, rightly or wrongly, whether you agree with it or not. It was a protest of COVID restrictions. Mm-hmm. It was a protest of, you know, the transgender veto, the veto of the transgender legislation. Mm-hmm. Of course that played into it, and people were vocal about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's part of the reason, and I advocated in convention last week, and I said we need to resize what these offices actually do to what they actually do instead of them being flashpoints for every political proxy fight we're fighting in the country. Mm-hmm. Secretary of State...
We're talking about the
Attorney
General, are we?
Secretary of State's candidates had to take positions on transgendered rights and abortion and guns and everything else, as if we were like trying to make sure that like a transgendered woman didn't get a tax ID number from the biz portal.
That's,
you know,
why
it's like
they ought to be appointed instead of elected, because you can't run on a platform that I'm going to keep the state seal safe. It's
you
just
run
not
the auto
the
dealers,
kind of thing.
You know,
yeah.
Like you're not like a culture warrior on the front line. But anyway, all of that factored into it. Yeah. It's just the mood of that room and the way that.
To answer the question, it was a referendum. I mean, in fact, I cannot remember.
I gave you a partial.
I cannot remember the last time a sitting governor didn't go to his own state party convention and speak. Mm-hmm. And he didn't go to speak because he was afraid of being booed, which happened.
He was there Friday
okay.
night. He was there
he
for the
was,
Friday night.
Did
Friday
he
convention.
Speak?
He did, yeah.
That's a
when?
Dinner, though. That wasn't the actual convention.
It wasn't
was
the convention. Oh, yeah, right. Well, so, and the fact that they nominated this guy who's been fired by the last two secretaries of state says volumes, because all he wants to talk about...
I think fired once and then quit once before he got fired.
Sure. So fired twice. Okay, let's
clear.
Not split hairs. And he wants to say that Donald Trump really was elected and there was all this fraud. I mean, it is a symbol of the fact... It actually is an illustration of the fact that the Republican Party is now controlled by their right-wing crazies. Okay?
This is the evidence. Yeah.
This is part of the evidence.
We did it.
There's more.
The Secretary of State's
there's
right.
more, but there's
it.
This is a good part of the evidence. The fact that you would vote for somebody to be the chief election officer who perpetuates the lies that Donald Trump has been saying in contrast and against the sitting governor. Who obviously had endorsed Holly Sullivan.
It is
a perfect example of the fact that you used to have these people on tap, but not on top. Now they're on top, and that is your party.
Nikki Kelly, does this create an opening for Democrats? The Secretary of State is also the state's election overseer. I mean, does this make it a little bit easier for the Democratic nominee, Destiny
Wells? I think
Wells?
It certainly gives Destiny Wells some... easy things to go after her opponent on. She can definitely point out his agreeing with Trump on things, his history in the very office he wants to hold. Mm-hmm. That definitely aids her. Sure. Now, would I go as far as to say they could win a statewide office? Probably not, unfortunately, due to the basic demographics of what we have in the state. I will say this, Kyle Hupfer, said up there, we're going to come together. But, earlier in that convention, he was up on stage telling people to stop calling each other rhinos and saying we need to stop dividing amongst each other. So mm-hmm. he can't, have it both ways.
Yeah. He can try.
Well, he can make the case for it and lose. I've been doing that my whole career.
And on this show in particular.
On the show. It's important to have that voice in it. So that whole room, because it wasn't odd. These went to 2-3 votes. The treasurer's mm-hmm. race went to 3. It was decided by a 3-vote margin.
I will say this. Yeah. I didn't see a single flyer or cogent argument against Holly Sullivan mm-hmm. and her actions in office.
Right.
It was all about Trump and not about Holly Sullivan.
Right.
Trump
I do hear a sound, and I think it may be Ronald Reagan spinning in his grave, because he famously said, don't speak ill mm-hmm. of other Republicans. Clearly that's, as so much of Reaganism has gone out the window.
That was on the Hallmark card of that era. That wasn't actually how the convention fights played
out,
if you'll recall.
We have not had a state convention of the Republican Party, or the Democratic Party for that matter, where you have such open heckling and open booing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the notion of civility, we used to argue about civility between Democrats and Republicans. Now the need is civility.
We had open heckling. In the last two, we've had open floor fights on the rules, on the platform we did this time.
That's different from heckling speakers.
They weren't heckling speakers.
No one
was booing speakers. What are you
Excuse
talking about?
Excuse me?
I've heard that a lot, but no one showed me any actual video or audio.
They didn't take any, did they?
they were trying to make points of order to insert themselves into the procedure of the
Right.
Of the, they right. were. That's right. what there was an organized right. effort right. to do right. that. There was right. somebody booing.
But in a way, this goes back to what I was
keep
saying.
Keep that song.
No, that's what the, they would do. On the abortion I'm not issue. Saying it was great.
When
it
you
was
have people were united against something, but now this is like a supermajority we see in the General Assembly. You have a lot more fissures when you are, you know, when you kind of lost your boogeyman and now you've got to be the ones who set policy. We see divisions within the parties, and that's where this comes
had,
from.
I've been on these not to this extent, for two decades. We've had them every time.
Platform, yes.
Yeah, you haven't know. Had the kind of animosity towards the sitting
We
governor.
Did towards Mitch Daniels.
Time now for viewer
when
feedback.
When he lost the Attorney General's race.
Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question. This week's question, was Diego Morales' win at the GOP convention a rebuke of Governor Eric Holcomb? Vote A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, should Mitch Daniels run for political office once he's left Purdue? 42% of you said yes, and 58% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. An advocate for Hoosiers with disabilities says it seems like Governor Eric Holcomb doesn't care about helping them. That's as the governor's inflation relief plan leaves out many of the lowest income Hoosiers. Holcomb's proposal is to send $225 to everyone who filed an Indiana tax return last year, even if they didn't owe anything. But many Hoosiers on disability and Social Security don't file taxes because they don't make enough. That's not a small number of people. AARP Indiana State Director Sarah Waddle says one in four Hoosiers rely on Social Security for at least 90% of their income.
So there's no way for these folks to add additional income to their pockets very easily.
Past president of Self-Advocates of Indiana, Sean Fulton, says Hoosiers with disabilities want the governor to think about all people, not just some.
They're thinking if the federal government can do the same, do it and do it in a timely manner and do it right, then the governor should be able to do the same as the federal government.
Holcomb's explanation for his proposal is that it's the fastest way to return money to taxpayers, though even those who don't file a return still pay Indiana's sales tax, the largest source of the state's revenue. John Schwannis, are the governor and legislators going to ignore this whole group of people?
Well, in fairness, I don't think they sat in some room and said, who can we really screw over in this proposition? Let's go after people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. No matter how you structure, and we saw the governor struggling and the administration struggling mightily to figure out how to come up with inflation relief that is workable. You know, mm-hmm. it's not going to be at the gas pump. It's not going to be this. So this is what they settled on. Obviously, Murphy's Law being Murphy's Law, you're going to have something go wrong and somebody is going to feel left out. However, I thought that back at the beginning of this session, when we looked at tax relief that was being extended to Hoosiers because of the financial windfall related, I presume, to the pandemic and other factors, there was one of the first priorities and one of the first bills that was enacted and signed, I believe, was to extend benefits to, if not these specific groups of people, but people who had not filed tax returns. Mm-hmm. So they, too, could benefit in the windfall. So written for that cause, but it still seems to me that the argument is the same.
Yeah.
You wanted to extend taxpayer relief to everybody, including those who didn't file forms, and that was a priority last session. So one would presume that it should be this session as well.
Okay, so then they'd pay income tax on it for the federal government, because that would be then a gift, or that would be then income to them from the state when it's not tax relief.
Not your turn,
I'm just saying. That's why it ought to be at the tax pump.
Way to argue those Republican...
That's why it ought to be at the tax pump where everybody benefits and it isn't income to anyone.
You can see the headline now. Yeah. Andalini against...
I'm not against it. I'm just saying, don't say it's $250 because they may have to pay tax on it.
Well, and the other thing to keep in mind, especially for Hoosiers with disabilities, is that if they are actually receiving disability relief, then they would also have to write in legislation that it doesn't count as
against their income.
Nikki Kelly, do you think that lawmakers are going to have enough time in this special session in order to address that? And do you think it's even a priority?
I doubt it. You know, I did ask the governor a couple weeks ago about this idea that this mechanism leaves some people out who don't make enough and don't file. And, He basically, I mean, he sort of acknowledged it and just said, but this is the most efficient, quickest way we have right now.
Yeah, it also contributes to inflation. Because they're going to spend that money.
Economists do and believe yeah, that. Economists yeah. we've spoken to do believe that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those people pay sales taxes, and they're not going to see right. any benefit. And, you know, I do hope they at least consider that strongly in mm-hmm. these upcoming weeks.
I mean, and you've interjected a number of times to talk about the gas tax relief. I mean, do you think that this is just another argument that Democrats have for doing
yeah,
this instead?
Yeah, I do. I think the President Biden's suggestion is the correct one. Mm-hmm. People are really feeling it at the pumps. He wants to suspend the federal sales tax. Mm-hmm. We could triple mm-hmm. that benefit by suspending the gas tax and the sales tax on gasoline. And everybody benefits, whether you drive or not, because you have your food transported, you have your clothing, all of those things have built-in costs to them. Everybody would benefit, even the disabled.
There's
and you wouldn't have income.
If you do that, yeah. there's technically no way to know
yeah,
if
there
the,
is.
If
so
the
there is.
Whether it goes through all the way. My suggestion was send everyone a prepaid gas card. Because
well,
then
that's another way to do it. But yeah. you would know that. Because you would yeah. go to the gas, you would only go to the gas station that lowered the price. Mm-hmm. You know? And how fast would that word get around?
I mean, Mike O'Brien, this also especially affects retired Hoosiers who don't have to file taxes. You know, do you think that Republicans are ignoring a pretty significant, you know, part of their base?
To John's point, I think anyone's being ignored. I think the governor's argument that this is the most efficient way to get money to sure. the most people is probably the approach that they're going through. I've talked to legislators and even friends and clients mm-hmm. and people you talk to, they're like, I don't know, this seems like a pretty blunt way. It's like, it's the same as my position on stimulus. Everyone gets $1,500. It's like, all right, well, does everyone need $1,500? Because I made more money during the pandemic because of the nature of work I do, like attorneys and other people did. I don't need $1,500. Don't send me $225. That's absurd. Like, how do we actually maybe think a little harder about how to target this in maybe a more effective way? Maybe that's through SNAP benefits. Maybe it's through some kind of, you know, low income, target, figure out a way to target low income
people.
Yeah. Who are actually do I love
to.
Gas prices where they are? No.
No.
Have I changed my behavior?
It would help
my
people that it would make a difference to. That's yeah. that's the point. Maybe what we should do is also have the alternative where you could give it back to teacher salaries or you could give it back to road construction. You know, for
I'm
those
sure
of us who 225,
we've got plenty of road money thanks to the fact that we haven't suspended the gas tax.
Well,
that is uninterrupted.
You know, that's why we need to do that.
The problem is, though, politically, and I think no one's going to argue against this, is at the ballot box, the neediest are not a potent force or as potent a force as the well-heeled.
Do you think somebody's going to change their vote based on receiving a couple hundred dollars? I don't.
There's not a political benefit to this, if anything.
No.
But to the extent that you're benefiting more people than you are, I mean, let's put it this way. More people Hoosiers will get
sure.
the benefit than will not
and
get the benefit.
And it won't change a single vote.
And on that note, the state's top health official says a new survey shows Indiana teens are struggling with increased rates of depression and anxiety. WFYI's Carter Barrett reports.
The Youth Risk Behavior Survey is an anonymous survey conducted every 2 years by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. While in school, teens are asked about sexual activity, drug use, physical activity, diet, and more. The results of the latest survey are not yet published, but Indiana Health Commissioner Dr. Christina Box discussed the findings at a recent rural health conference. She said she's most concerned about the growing number of teens struggling with their mental health.
Nearly 50% of students said that they felt sad or hopeless almost every day for 2 weeks in the past year.
And about 1 in 10 Indiana teens said they had attempted suicide at least once or more than once in the prior year.
Nikki Kelly, there's often been pushback at the State House about providing mental health services to kids in school, even though data shows that's the most effective way to get it to them. Do numbers like this soften that ground?
I hope so, because to use a phrase I used earlier, which is, trying to have it both ways, and we've seen this on discussions, for instance, on gun control debates. They say it's about mental health, but then they immediately shut down any efforts to actually get mental health to young people. They want it to go all through the parent. And I'm not saying the parent shouldn't be involved at all, but sometimes the parent's the problem.
Mm-hmm. John Schwanis, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You have a portion of the General Assembly that doesn't want to see you know, parents being surprised by these analyses. And in fact, Indiana, this is something of an unusual turn for Indiana because it had enough response. The response rate was such that it could be compared apples to apples with the rest of the country. In the past, a lot of schools have said no, probably under pressure from those who say, you know, schools and government have no place in the minds of our children. In schools, they need to get out of the minds of our children and leave that to the parents. And I'm only being somewhat flippant and facetious. That is, I think, the attitude.
Only somewhat. Finally, the Republican candidate for state treasurer, Daniel Elliott, won his nomination at the state GOP convention this week by just 3 votes out of more than 1,400. Now, the only tie break for convention nomination votes is another round of voting or the state party chair can break the tie. Mike O'Brien, what would be a more entertaining way of breaking this tie?
As a former county chairman, I ran so many conventions and they never tied, and I always wanted them to because I wanted to pick. I'm like, we're not voting again.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe booze. I don't know. We could like see who boos the loudest.
I think I'm with arm wrestle.
Now that everybody has guns, though, why not just
a duel?
Oh,
shootout!
A duel served our country for 100+ years.
Not a duel, a shootout.
I think you got to have some decorum when you're shooting at each other.
Do it right in the middle of the convention.
And that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or on the WFYI app. I'm Lauren Chapman of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next week because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.